Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is Think and Grow Rich Thursday, April 19th, 2012. I'm excited to be here. We are nearing finishing up our discussion on fear and understanding the different fears there are so that we can recognize them and eliminate them and move forward with more faith. And I'm grateful to know about these fears, but you know what? I'm going to be excited when we get past them and move on to the other portion of the book. But nonetheless, today we're going to learn about a couple of the other major fears that grip people and hold them down and prevent them from living life to the fullest. And the first one is called the fear of old age. In the main, this fear grows out of two sources. First, the thought that old age may bring poverty. Secondly, and by far the most common source of origin, from false and cruel teachings of the past, which have been too well mixed with fire and brimstone, and other bogies cunningly designed to enslave men through fear. In the basic fear of old age, man has two very sound reasons for his apprehension, one growing out of his distrust of his fellow man, who may seize whatever worldly goods he may possess, and the other arising from the terrible pictures of the world beyond, which were planted in his mind through social heredity before he came into full possession of his mind. The possibility of ill health, which is more common as people grow older, is also a contributing cause for this common fear of old age. Eroticism also enters into the cause of fear of old age, as no man cherishes the thought of diminishing sex attraction. The most common cause of fear of old age is associated with the possibility of poverty. Poorhouse is not a pretty word. It throws a chill into the mind of every person who faces the possibility of having to spend his declining years on a poor farm. Another contributing cause of the fear of old age is the possibility of loss of freedom and independence, as old age may bring with it the loss of both physical and economic freedom. Symptoms of the fear of old age. The most common symptoms of this fear are the tendency to slow down and develop an inferiority complex at the age of mental maturity around the age of 40, falsely believing oneself to be slipping because of age. The habit of speaking apologetically of oneself as being old merely because one has reached the age of 40 or 50, instead of reversing the rule and expressing gratitude for having reached the age of wisdom and understanding. The habit of killing off initiative, imagination, and self-reliance by falsely believing oneself too old to exercise these qualities. The habit of the man or woman of 40 dressing with the aim of trying to appear much younger and affecting mannerisms of youth, thereby inspiring ridicule by both friends and strangers. The next one, fear of death. To some, this is the cruelest of all basic fears. The reason is obvious. The terrible pangs of fear associated with the thought of death, in the majority of cases, may be charged directly to religious fanaticism. The so-called heathen are less afraid of death than the more civilized. For hundreds of millions of years, man has been asking the still unanswered questions, whence and whither? Where did I come from, and where am I going? During the darker ages of the past, the more cunning and crafty were not slow to offer the answer to these questions for a price. Witness now the major source of origin of the fear of death. Come into my tent, embrace my faith, accept my dogmas, and I will give you a ticket that will admit you straight away into heaven when you die, cries the leader of sectarianism. Remain out of my tent, says the same leader, and may the devil take you and burn you throughout eternity. Eternity is a long time. Fire is a terrible thing. The thought of eternal punishment with fire not only causes man to fear death, it often causes him to lose his reason. It destroys interest in life and makes happiness impossible. During my research, I reviewed a book entitled A Catalog of the Gods, in which were listed the 30,000 gods which man has worshipped. Think of it, 30,000 of them, represented by everything from a crawfish to a man. It is little wonder that men have become frightened at the approach of death. While the religious leader may not be able to provide safe conduct into heaven, nor by lack of such provision allow the unfortunate to descend into hell, the possibility of the latter seems so terrible that the very thought of it lays hold of the imagination in such a realistic way that it paralyzes reason and sets up the fear of death. In truth, no man knows, and no man has ever known, what heaven or hell is like, nor does any man know if either place actually exists. This very lack of positive knowledge opens the door of the human mind to the charlatan, so he may enter and control that mind with his stock of ledger domain. I'll have to look that one up. And various brands of pious fraud and trickery. The fear of death is not as common now as it was during the age when there were no great colleges and universities. Men of science have turned the spotlight of truth upon the world, and this truth is rapidly freeing men and women from this terrible fear of death. The young men and women who attend the colleges and universities are not easily impressed by fire and brimstone. Through the aid of biology, astronomy, geology, and other related sciences, the fears of the Dark Ages, which gripped the minds of men and destroyed their reason, have been dispelled. Insane asylums are filled with men and women who have gone mad because of the fear of death. This fear is useless. Death will come, no matter what anyone may think about it. Accept it as a necessity and pass the thought out of your mind. It must be a necessity or it would not come to all. Perhaps it is not as bad as it had been pictured. The entire world is made up of only two things, energy and matter. In elementary physics, we learned that neither matter nor energy, the only two realities known to man, can be created or destroyed. Both matter and energy can be transformed, but neither can be destroyed. Life is energy, if it is anything. If neither energy nor matter can be destroyed, of course, life cannot be destroyed. Life, like other forms of energy, may be passed through various processes of transition or change, but it cannot be destroyed. Death is mere transition. If death is not mere change or transition, then nothing comes after death except a long, eternal, peaceful sleep, and sleep is nothing to be feared. Thus, you may wipe out forever the fear of death. And here are the symptoms of the fear of death. The habit of thinking about dying instead of making the most of life, due generally to lack of purpose or lack of a suitable occupation. This fear is more prevalent among the aged, but sometimes the more youthful are victims of it. The greatest of all remedies for the fear of death is a burning desire for achievement, backed by useful service to others. A busy person seldom has time to think about dying. He finds life too thrilling to worry about death. Sometimes the fear of death is closely associated with the fear of poverty, where one's death would leave loved ones poverty-stricken. In other cases, the fear of death is caused by illness and the consequent breaking down of physical body resistance. The most common causes of the fear of death are ill health, poverty, lack of appropriate occupation, disappointment over love, insanity, and religious fanaticism. Old man worry. Worry is a state of mind based upon fear. It works slowly but persistently. It is insidious and subtle. Step by step, it digs itself in until it paralyzes one's reasoning faculty, destroys self-confidence and initiative. Worry is a form of sustained fear caused by indecision. Therefore, it is a state of mind which can be controlled. An unsettled mind is helpless. Indecision makes an unsettled mind. Most individuals lack the willpower to reach decisions promptly and to stand by them after they have been made, even during normal business conditions. During periods of economic unrest, such as the world recently experienced, the individual is handicapped not alone by his inherent nature to be slow at reaching decisions, but he is influenced by the indecisions of others around him who have created a state of mass indecision. During the Depression, the whole atmosphere all over the world was filled with fearenza and worryitis, the two mental disease germs which began to spread themselves after the Wall Street frenzy in 1929. There is only one known antidote for these germs. It is the habit of prompt and firm decision. Moreover, it is an antidote which every individual must apply for himself. We do not worry over conditions once we have reached a decision to follow a definite line of action. I once interviewed a man who was to be electrocuted 2 hours later. The condemned man was the calmest of some 8 men who were in the death cell with him. His calmness prompted me to ask him how it felt to know that he was going into eternity in a short while. With a smile of confidence on his face, he said, "It feels fine. Just think, brother. My troubles will soon be over. I have had nothing but trouble all my life. It has been a hardship to get food and clothing. Soon I will not need these things. I have felt fine ever since I learned for certain that I must die. I made up my mind then to accept my fate in good spirit." As he spoke, he devoured a dinner of proportions sufficient for 3 men, eating every mouthful of food brought to him, and apparently enjoying it as much as if no disaster awaited him. Decision gave this man resignation to his fate. Decision can also prevent one's acceptance of undesired circumstances. The 6 basic fears become translated into a state of worry through indecision. Relieve yourself forever of the fear of death by reaching a decision to accept death as an inescapable event. Whip the fear of poverty by reaching a decision to get along with whatever wealth you can accumulate without worry. Put your foot upon the neck of criticism by reaching a decision not to worry about what other people think, do, or say. Eliminate the fear of old age by reaching a decision to accept it, not as a handicap, but as a great blessing with which carries with it wisdom, self-control, and understanding not known to youth. And I got to just point something out here. A lot of those lines that Napoleon just shared in that paragraph, I've written out in my daily affirmation because I made the decision to embed those beliefs into my mind to help myself overcome the fear of criticism, death, ill health, so on and so forth. So that would not be an unwise thing for all of us to do. Acquit yourself of the fear of ill health by decision to forget symptoms. Master the fear of loss of love by reaching a decision to get along without it, if that is necessary. Kill the habit of worry in all its forms by reaching a general blanket decision that nothing which life has to offer is worth the price of worry. With this decision will come poise, peace of mind, and calmness of thought, which will bring happiness. A man whose mind is filled with fear not only destroys his own chances of intelligent action, but he transmits these destructive vibrations to the minds of all who come into contact with him, and destroys also their chances. Even a dog or a horse knows when its master lacks courage. Moreover, a dog or a horse will pick up the vibrations of fear thrown off by its master and behave accordingly. Lower down the line of intelligence in the animal kingdom, one finds this same capacity to pick up the vibrations of fear. A honeybee immediately senses fear in the mind of a person for reasons unknown. A bee will sting the person whose mind is releasing vibrations of fear much more readily than it will molest the person whose mind registers no fear. The vibrations of fear pass from one mind to another just as quickly and as surely as the sound of the human voice passes from the broadcasting station to the receiving set of radio and by the self-same medium. Mental telepathy is a reality. Thoughts pass from one mind to another voluntarily, whether or not this fact is recognized by either the person releasing the thoughts or the person who picks up those thoughts. The person who gives expression by word of mouth to negative or destructive thoughts is practically certain to experience the results of those words in the form of a destructive kickback. The release of destructive thought impulses alone, without the aid of words, produces also a kickback in more ways than one. First of all, and perhaps most important to be remembered, the person who releases thoughts of a destructive nature must suffer damage through the breaking down of the faculty of creative imagination. Secondly, the presence in the mind of any destructive emotion develops a negative personality which repels people and often converts them into antagonists. The third source of damage to the person who entertains or releases negative thoughts lies in this significant fact. these thought impulses are not only damaging to others, but they embed themselves in the subconscious mind of the person releasing them, and there become a part of his character. One is never through with a thought merely by releasing it. When a thought is released, it spreads in every direction through the medium of the ether, but it also plants itself permanently in the subconscious mind of the person releasing it. Your business in life is presumably to achieve success. To be successful, you must find peace of mind, acquire the material needs of life, and above all, attain happiness. All of these evidences of success begin in the form of thought impulses. You may control your own mind. You have the power to feed it whatever thought impulses you choose. With this privilege goes also the responsibility of using it constructively. You are the master of your own earthly destiny, just as surely as you have the power to control your own thoughts. You may influence, direct, and eventually control your own environment, making your life what you want it to be, or you may neglect to exercise the privilege which is yours, to make your life to order, thus casting yourself upon the broad sea of circumstance where you will be tossed hither and yon like a chip upon the waves of the ocean. Excited to hear your thoughts, folks. Star 6 to unmute your line. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the content of the book today.
Good morning, Paul. It's Dr. Fran.
Good morning, Dr. Fran.
I'm going to break tradition and speak first this morning. One of the things that I've learned in my life is never to go past a word.
Hey, Doc. I don't know if that's your phone. We're getting a little bit of feedback. If you have pressed star 6 to unmute your line and you're not Doc Fran, please press star 6 once again and mute that line out. Go ahead. I wanted to hear you loud and clear. Thank you, Doc.
You're welcome, and thank you. Whenever I encounter a word that I don't remember the meaning of or never knew the meaning of, I immediately go to a dictionary and look it up, because what happens when you have a misunderstood, your mind locks on that misunderstood and it doesn't move past that point. So legerdemain, the Webster Dictionary defines that as skill in or practice of feats of magic, jugglery, or other arts involving a dexterous manipulation of the hands or sleight of hand. Second definition is trickery or deception. So that is what legerdemain. What a wild word for something fairly simple.
Back to you, Paul.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you did that, Doc. Now I don't have to look it up, and I appreciate that. And appreciate Doc. A lot of times, he'll be the source of words that I don't understand. He'll challenge me to look them up and grow my vocabulary. So I appreciate that about you, Doc. Thank you for helping me grow in that area. Star 6, who's next? Legerdemain. Dermain or
Good
domain?
Morning, it's Rick.
Good morning, Rick.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's a fantastic word. I've actually used the sleight of hand. A lot of people use sleight of hand on Facebook and other means and other places. I got it from actually reading this book, Legerdemain. It's very interesting. A fantastic word. You know, fear, fear really and truly fear is misunderstood. I don't think anybody really understands fear because it's real. We're motivated by fear. I mean, we're on this call because of fear. Whether you like it or not, you fear poverty. Who wants to be in poverty? I believe being poor is a sin. Nobody wants to be, really and truly. There's fear. It's real. You know, I think we need to accept that and trying to get around it, really, you know. Because I tell you, fear motivates you to want to go out and get the things. Fear of not getting living a full life, you know. You don't know what's going to happen. Fear of the unknown. I mean, these are real things, and these are things that can help you grow or hurt you. You know, there's a flip side to each and everything. We know that. And so I just believe that, you know, people try to twist this in ways but because they don't understand it. And so, you know, I embrace fear, period. And when I look at fear, I said, you know what? Hey, this is what motivates me to keep going. Keep on keeping on. And try to strive, just improve every day. Kaizen, getting better every day. I seek to improve every day in my life. That's what I want to do. I embrace fear. Right back to you, Paul.
Interesting perspective. Appreciate that, Rick. Embrace it. Definitely a good way, a different way to look at it. Appreciate those thoughts.
Yeah, really. I did some work for a gentleman, Gavin De Becker. I didn't really know who he was at the time. This was back in the 80s. I think this was about 88 or 89, out in North Hollywood, California. And Gavin De Becker actually provides security for the President of the United States. I didn't know that at the time. Later on, we had some discrepancy, and they didn't want to pay. They wanted to delay payment, this, that, and the other. But then I learned who they were at the time. Anyways, you know, I got my payment. But he wrote a book about using fear and benefiting from fear, and actually. I purchased a book the other day, and I gave it to one of my business partners. I gave it to him for his wife to read, and she started reading it. But I think it's real. It's just there. It's real. I think that, you know, if you look at it, you look at fear, and these are certain things. That we're not talking about the hypochondria or something like that, but just getting into using fear, try to understand it and learn it. Don't go with the norm. Just try to figure out what it means to you. You see, and you don't have to follow everything everybody else is saying, and to see what does it mean to you. The word means to you, because really communication is a response, right? And so if I'm telling you something, you give me a response. Maybe it doesn't. Jive with what I'm trying to find, but that's really the response, right? So that's the response. So that's what they're getting from it. So it's a constant battle with this thing. I don't battle with it, you know. I embrace it. So that's just my opinion, anyway. All right, right back to you.
Yeah, would love to pose this question to the group, because you make an interesting point, Rick, and it is a little bit different perspective. This chapter from Napoleon Hill on fear, the six fears, I could be wrong, but I get the sense that he's teaching us to identify the six major fears and eliminate them from our lives. Don't fear poverty. Don't fear criticism. Don't fear ill health. Get to a point where they're eliminated so that they don't hold us back. And there's a lot to be said for eliminating fear and developing the state of mind known as faith. But there's one other aspect that you hit on, and that is the truth. I believe this is a truth, that human beings are motivated by two major things: fear of loss and hope of gain. I learned that from Anthony Robbins, and Anthony Robbins teaches that fear of loss is usually a greater motivator than hope of gain. And so there is maybe a way that we can actually use fear to our advantage. And I'm just curious what everyone's thoughts are on you know, those two different perspectives. Do we want to eliminate fear, master it, develop a state of mind in total faith, or do we want to possibly use fear of loss as a motivator to drive us forward? I'd love to hear anyone's thoughts on that.
Let
or anything else.
Forward.
You don't have to comment on that.
Can you hear me? This is Marlise.
Yes, Marlise. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, this is a really powerful lesson. And I must say, I'm going to be 69 this year. I'll tell you, I've never been happier in my life and more have more peace of mind and heart. And I'll tell you, it is wonderful to get older because I just find, you know, you do become wiser as long as you choose to keep growing and learning. I think they're getting some kind of background noise, huh?
Yeah, star 6, if you're not Marlise and you've unmuted your line, please press star 6 so we can clear those lines.
Yeah, thank you. And I know it's not just myself, but you ask many other people who are older, and you ask them, would you want to be 20 again or 25? Said, no way, I would not want to still live in this world where you're afraid of everything. Oh, where I had so many hang-ups and inferiority complexes and felt so limited by, you know, all of these beliefs. And it feels so freeing to become, actually, when you do keep learning and growing, because I'm always amazed that I do meet plenty of other adults or even relatives that I used to look up to. I would meet them years later, and I thought, wow, they still behave like little children. I guess they haven't learned. So you can become with your body old, but never become wiser or become freed of all of those fears. I find the biggest fear, again, the fear of death, one of the most incredible, wonderful stories I read over nearly 30 years ago. I think it was the first one about the near-death experience by Dr. Ritchie. It's called Return from Tomorrow. And that was, it's as if, you know, my world just opened up and it was just such an incredible, incredible relief. And knowing since then, I actually look forward to that day. I know it's not going to be as wonderful for those who are left behind, because in anybody really lose their physical and experience the physical death of a loved one. But it's absolutely glorious what we can look forward to, because there are plenty of stories where people, ever since that came out, and Dr. Raymond Moody, the psychiatrist at that time, started to do a lot of research. The psychiatrist, Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who has had a lot of experiences with that, and they've been able to help us completely let go of any fear of death, but rather just the opposite. Because life does go on, and it must also help us then to remember that the material things are not going to be important at all at that point, but how we grow spiritually and mentally, that is what we are taking along. And from what I still remember, and I've read this book actually several times, Return from Tomorrow has still been my very favorite. What we consider, or what we call hell, it is the state of mind. It's those thoughts and the feelings that you are still going to take with you. People think if I die, it's going to be peaceful sleep. Well, we know otherwise. At least I do, and I think a lot of other people do in this day and age. So we are so great, so fortunate, and I'm so grateful for that we've had all these enlightened, so to speak, people, or those who have no longer had the fear now to come out and actually share their experiences. They were ridiculed many years ago. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I mean, she didn't even want to continue that research because she was considered to be crazy. And now it has become really, something that everybody can embrace and just feel very confident about. I just saw another video, an interview by a German-Russian missionary who was killed in a car accident, was pronounced dead for 5 hours, came back because she was told, on the so to speak, and on the other dimension, that it's not his time and he needs to go back and really teach that there is no death. And here, 5 major organs were removed, and he still continues living, which every doctor, everyone who understands about our physiology said, that's impossible. No human being can continue being, you know, that healthy and still continue living without those organs. So these wonderful, incredible things keep happening. So that's why when you lose your fear of death, you lose your fear of criticism, at least in my case, that was the major thing. And the older you get and the freer you become, and I just consider those two my wisdom years that we are going to enjoy. I'm going to stay active and productive up to the last moment. And we have many wonderful role models in our society, and I think those are the ones we want to look up to and emulate. But that was just one major part I just wanted to contribute this morning. Thank you, and you have a beautiful day, everyone.
Thank you, Marlies. Really always do appreciate your wisdom and your insight and your zest and love for life. Thank you for those great, great, great comments. Star 6, who's next?
It's Judy from Disney World.
Hey, Judy from Disney World.
I found a place in the parking lot that's not too loud. At any rate, one of the things that I was doing while I was studying this book back in the 80s was there's another book that was very helpful to me that I don't fear this stuff. And I'm not a worrier, never have been, never will be. And the book that I studied was Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. And one of the things that I learned, the crux of the book, was that we carry things around like they're pets. And we stroke them and we feed them, like ill health, like worry, like fear of criticism, fear of death, fear of this, fear of that. And it made sense to me. I found that what I comprehend is my path. And so it's been a path for a long time. I'm brand new to Florida. I'm starting over. The last 5 years have been what people pat me on my pointy little head and say, oh, poor Judy, poor Judy, poor Judy. And I don't. I was waiting for Social Security disability for 4 years and living on $400 a month and finally got disability, and now, gee, it's up to $865 a month. I'm not worried about that. My goal is to get off disability now that I've got it. I'm not worried about what is coming tomorrow. I'm not thinking about what is coming tomorrow. I'm thinking about what is today and what can I do for today. And I've learned to not carry around negativity as if it were a pet. I don't stroke those things. I don't cuddle those things. I don't think on those things. I think of positive, because one of what I learned is the greatest spiritual principle for me is what goes around comes around. I put out positive, positive comes back. And even though my living situation may not look it, it's quite positive. If you put out negativity, negativity comes back. And that's what Napoleon Hill is talking about. I'm laughing at the age brackets that he's putting in there, 40 and 50, and maybe years ago it was 40 and 50, and I turned 60 this year. And I am relishing being 60 because I'm still 25 in my heart and in my mind. And those are things that I keep with me. I'm not in fear of what's coming today because I know today will pass. This will change. This is growing. And these are things that I've studied and learned to live with. and I embrace it. And so those are my thoughts for today, and I'm going to sit here in the parking lot covering one ear so I can continue to hear everybody. I love you all. Thank you. Back to you, Paul.
Judy, thank you so much for dialing in from Disney World and taking a few minutes out of your vacation day to share those great thoughts with us. I loved what you said, and I love that analogy of carrying around pets and stroking them and paying attention to the pets that we have and how easy it will be for us to, you know, see what pets other people have when we're talking to them and getting to know them. And that's a great analogy. Thank you for sharing. Star 6, who's next? And I actually have that book, Sermon on the Mount. Somebody's a friend sent that to me, so I'm going to have to read that. I'm glad you brought that up.
And yeah, that's an interesting matter. Judy talked mostly about worry, being worrying. And thinking about today only, there was William Hustler. He was, the main founder of the John Hopkins University. I think initially this guy used to worry a lot. And he said that he was on a voyage on a ship, and he was on the bridge where the captain, by the touch of a button, he could get these watertight compartments to happen, right? Just from a switch of a button. And it's a drill that they practice. And what happened, he developed a way to fight worry, okay? Dale Carnegie, everybody knows Dale Carnegie from the guy who wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People. What most people don't understand is that worry is one of the biggest killer. In fact, worry killed more people than the five communicable diseases combined together. So what's even more important was a book he wrote, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And in that book, he talks what William Hustler talked about, and he said, you want to live in what they call day-tight compartments. In other words, you can't live in yesterday. You can't live in the past. You can't live in the future. Those are, both of those entities are two infinities you cannot possibly live in. And he talked about in the Lord's Prayer, where it says, give me bread for today, you know, give us this day our daily bread. He said, not the prayer didn't ask for bread for a week, bread for a month, just for today. And living today is one of the most incredible things, because if you don't actually, like Judy was talking about, if you're not living today and you're thinking about other days and other things to come, you're robbing yourself of life, the real life. And I mentioned the poem before on here, you know, with Kalidasa, and said, live this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lies all the verities and realities of your existence. The bliss of growth, and the glory in action, and splendor of beauty. For every yesterday is but a dream, and every tomorrow, oh, so today well live, make every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. So live well, therefore, for this day, such is the salutation of the dawn. This was 2500 BC. The Indian Sanskrit called Kalidasa. It's a wonderful poem. When I read that every single morning. I go over that poem every single morning. I remind myself of this. Worry is completely different from fear. It's incredible, but it's very confusing. No one really has this down, okay? But what it means to you, okay, it's very important. You know, I think that Ralph Waldo Emerson even may be confused about this. He said that Ralph Waldo Emerson declared a tremendous truth, and that he said that they conquer who believe they can, which that's good. But he said he added that you do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain. That's also good to a degree, but when you practice confidence and faith, and your fears and insecurities will soon have no power over you. That's also a fantastic truth, but fear still exists. Okay? Fear will always exist, okay? I mean, there's nobody's going to go into the middle of Watts and just lay in their car, open door, and say, we're not fair. That would be just totally dumb. But you see, I mean, don't get confused about this, okay? Now, worrying is an entirely different thing from fear. And so there's a distinction. You need to draw the distinction between that and get an understanding about that. But what it means to you, I think, is the most important thing. But, yeah, you don't want to let fear drag you down and prevent you from moving forward, you see. And so I think you need to really, on an individual basis, okay, because people are going to have their own opinion of this, and there's no really clear-cut situation. Now, we know that fear exists. You cannot escape it. There's no way. It's not possible, in my opinion, humble opinion, that is. Back to you then, Paul.
Thank you, Rick. Mike Nelson, go ahead, sir. I thought that was Mike coming out with Rick, was it, or was it somebody else?
No, it wasn't me, Paul.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Someone else was jumping out right there when Rick started talking. I thought he said his name was Mike. And if not, who's next? Love to hear from you.
It's Judy from Disney World again.
Hey,
what
Judy.
I want to say is, a lot of what I've learned is what I'm going to share that I'm 27 years sober. And Alcoholics Anonymous is a good catalyst for me not drinking. One of the book that the founders used before the Alcoholics Anonymous book was written was Sermon on the Mount. And it talks about spiritual experience, and it's the spiritual experience that changes people. And what I've discovered after 27 years is that I have a spiritual experience every day because I stay in today. And so I just wanted to throw that out. I'm grateful for what I have. I'm grateful for all the years of practice that I have to where things have gone from my head down into my heart. And it all does take practice. Being fearful takes practice. Not worrying takes practice. And before you know it, a spiritual experience does happen. Faith grows, and you live in today for what you can do today for yourself and for others. And so I wanted to throw that out because at 60, I do have a little bit of wisdom. I've lived through a lot. And I'm sorry I didn't catch who was talking, talked about what. I am originally from Los Angeles. I was born in the San Fernando Valley, and I'm as white as white can be, and I got married in Watts in 1968. And no fear. Got to tell you, no fear. And that was long before I ever drank, long before I ever got sober, but still no fear. And I don't know where that comes from, but I am more than grateful for it. And I try to pass these things on to others as I help others, not only in Alcoholics Anonymous, but also with what I do.
Thank you, Judy. I'm going to try to mute the line. *6 to unmute your line if you'd like to come on out. Would love to hear from you. Please make sure you press *6 when you're done speaking. Yes.
From Tennessee.
Oh, Judy, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Linda.
Hello?
From Tennessee. Hello?
Yes, yes. Did you still have some things to share there before Linda? Linda, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Well, I'm listening to this call. I wasn't on the beginning of it, but I called up at 9:30, and I just want to say that what I've heard since 9:30 was just amazing, that people talk about the difference between fear and worrying. I don't think I'm filled with fear at all, but I have always been a very big worrier, and this is something I understand that I've got to try and get rid of out of my thoughts, because I am a very big worrier. Everybody tells me, stop worrying, you're always worrying about things you can't alter. It disturbs my sleep and all sorts of things like that. But I understand that this is something that I've got to conquer. And listening to these calls on the mornings that I am available to listen are just awesome. It really is. And give us this day our daily bread. I think that was such a powerful statement that the gentleman before me was talking about, that you have to think just about today, not worry about the past, because you can't alter that. I'm not a reader, so I haven't read all these fabulous books that you all quote from and talk about. So I'm not a terribly learned person, but I'm 68 this year as well. So I've lived a very difficult life in a lot of areas. And 124 is bringing me complete goals. In fact, this morning why I couldn't get on the call is that my daughter has got a car, which I desperately want to buy, and I've got to just get my act together and sort out now that I can get the money to buy this car from her before she offers it to a dealer to swap in. And I've just got to be more positive about everything and just not be such a worrier. And that is my one big problem I've got to conquer. So I'm looking forward to a very, very good year, I think. And I've got this company and all you wonderful people to help me with that and to make it possible. So I just want to say how very thankful I am to be able to listen to these people who are much more learned than me, even though they're much younger than me, some of them. But it's fabulous what I am learning on this. So thank you so much anyway. Thanks, Paul.
Linda, thank you so much for being on the call and sharing those thoughts and perceptions. I want to repeat something real quick here at the end of Thinking Grow, at the end of this chapter. You may control your own mind. You have the power to feed it whatever thought impulses you choose. With this privilege goes also the responsibility of using it constructively. And then he goes on to say that we're the master of our own earthly destiny, just as surely as we have the power to control our own thoughts. Well, I want to pose this question. Do you take that seriously? Do you take that seriously, that you can control your own thoughts and therefore you can control your own life? And if you do, when I decided to really start to take this seriously, I realized that I could plant in my mind whatever thought I wanted to be there. And so I started to keep a document where I would write down the thoughts that I wanted to plant into my mind so that I could repeat them on a daily basis. And I want to share with you just one quick experience of how powerful this is. One of the things that I noticed that I do that I don't like is sometimes when I'm with my children, when I'm reading them stories or whatnot at nighttime, I'm thinking about other things. I'm thinking about work. I'm thinking about, let me just get these kids to bed so I can go do something else. And I realized that is not a thing that I like about myself. So I wrote down on my affirmation, I love my children dearly and express my love to them through focused attention. Okay, something that I recognized I didn't like in myself, so now that's in my affirmation. Well, the last 3 days, when I say that to myself in the morning and at nighttime, I love my children dearly and I express my love to them through focused attention, what happens to me automatically now when I'm with my children is I remember that and I say to myself, okay, how do I express my love to my kids? Through focused attention. So I pay attention to them. I put my heart and my energy into telling them the story that I'm reading, and I watch the expressions on their face, and I love it. And this will work with any aspect of character that we want to develop. And Linda talked about worrying. Well, identify what you worry about, Linda, and reverse it. So like if you worry about what other people think, do, or say, then I have in my daily affirmation, I don't worry. Worry about what other people think, do, or say. And it's amazing that you'll start to change just simply by writing down that thought and planting it in your brain on a daily basis. So I just wanted to reemphasize the powerful, powerful method of affirmation, of incantation, whatever you want to call it. Basically, it's planting the thoughts in your head that you want to be there and consciously designing who you are and who your character is and watching it throughout the day and recognizing beliefs you want to have and beliefs you want to get rid of and designing that document that is going to determine who you are. So I just want to throw that out there. Star 6, who's next?
Paul, this is Anita Young.
Anita, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Paul. I'm sitting here with Rob. We're kind of listening to the call together. I have an elderly lady that was in our church many, many years ago told me, because I used to be a big, big worrier, and my mom still is, so I think it's, you know, kind of passed down, but things like that, that you know, the leaf that fall far from the tree. But anyway, she told me, she says, worrying is a lack of faith. Like, God, you can't take care of this, so I have to take it upon myself to worry about it because you can't. You're not big enough to take care of it, so I have to worry about it. And the Bible tells us, don't worry about today. Today will take care of itself. Well, when tomorrow comes, it's today. Every tomorrow, when you're there, it's today. So we don't worry about today. Today will take care of itself. We got enough trouble today, and, you know, don't worry about tomorrow. And the second thing is, I was a pastor's wife for a number of years, and during that time, we come across a lot of people, and we found that people that were afraid to die, a lot of times they had issues that they needed to settle. Because if you're afraid to die, you better ask yourself why. You know, you can be concerned about, you know, your death and be prepared for it, but if you're terrified, if you are just absolutely terrified, do a self-examination and find out why. Back to you, Paul.
Great thoughts. Thank you, Anita, and welcome, Rob, to the call. Thanks to both of you for listening this morning and participating. Thanks, Anita. Star 6, who's next? And please don't forget to star 6 yourself after you've spoken. We're still getting some background noise.
Paul, this is Jane.
Hi, Jane.
How are you doing?
Excellent.
What she just said is what I've been thinking all along here. The opposite of fear is faith. Okay, and faith is what brings us to think of what we can do and what we can make a difference at doing, and it brings about that positive thinking. And once you think positive, you think possible. Okay, it is possible. What is the possibility thinking? And that brings with it a call to action. Positive thinking is you sit back and it's simply thinking. And you want to take action on that thought. So then it becomes possibility thinking. And it moves you to actually start or stay with something. And it allows you to bounce back, start over again. Doesn't matter what the disappointments are. Worrying will never get you. Usually I always found that the things I worry about never happen. The things that occurred that weren't good in my life, I never imagined would happen. I never worried about them because they never entered my mind that they were even possible to happen. So once you overcome that with faith and you know that things can get better, you take action, and that's the possibilities in your life. And you become optimistic again, okay? And optimism is an emotional thing, and it comes out in your personality, and it attracts other positive people who think of possibilities. And that's who we all are on this call. But that's how I've gotten through many, many downturns in my life, I guess you could call it, is to have that faith, to wake up each morning and to say, you know, not what I don't have anymore, but what can I have? What do I still have? What was retained? And how can I make my life better? And that's
Hello.
It.
Thank you, Jane. Great, great thoughts. Love your philosophy. Appreciate you for sharing that. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Neville.
Hey, Neville.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks for asking.
Judy just hit something there, and everyone has hit it, you know, back to Rick and embracing fear and so forth. But let me go back to Judy first and the young lady who said that she's not learning. But listen, we all learn. We learn different things. And Judy just told a while ago about faith. Faith is about action and taking action. So therefore, positive action is what keeps your faith strong and allows you to achieve the things that you want to achieve. Now, you mentioned the Bible, and the Bible tells you, and most people should take a look at this. It says so in more than one place in the Bible, but I think it's Philippians 4, 6 through 8, or through the end of that chapter. It tells you, be anxious about nothing, but in all things through prayer and supplications, go about your business and think on these things. It tells us think on good, think in purity. Think on all things that you want that are good. Do not see the negative. Once you begin to put positive thoughts in your mind, then you are able to resist any the intrusion of fear in your thoughts. Because fear is just thoughts that you're manufacturing for yourself. It's not something, like everything else here, what we think on the most is what eventually happens to us. So if we think on good things, act in good things, and understand that, yes, there are times when certain things are going to come across your thought that you don't want, that should not be there. You just laugh of it, and it will die. It will just die. There are times when things are happening to you, and you laugh at evil. And you just laugh off the thought in your mind. Just chuckle to yourself. Oh, man, think of something good. It will go away from you totally and totally and completely. It might come again. But it's for you to constantly build yourself up with positive things. And there's a prayer that we say, and I say it sometimes, and not every day, but I think I'm going to start doing it every day. We say, God, ask God to grant you serenity to accept the things you cannot change. A courage to change the thing that you can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We must be active, we must be positive, and keep it going even when things are not going your way. Because what's the alternative? If you think on the negative and the other negative, and negative things begin to happen to you, then you're going to say, see, yeah, I knew this was going to happen. It's a self-fulfilling negative thought. So why don't we make it self-fulfilling, positive thoughts. As a matter of fact, I'll give an example of what happened to my wife and myself. When we've been married a few years, we were so blessed, we were on the way to Rome. And my wife was deathly afraid of flying. I think she had only flown once in her life before. We had gone to Disney World with the children. And it was long ago, you can tell, I was on Pan Am 747, so you know it's been a while. So we're on the way to Rome, and when we get, I think we're close to the Pyrenees. Whenever we flew, my wife used to grab my hand in the wrist, and the print of her nails would be stuck in my wrist. I didn't want to be close to my wife at all. I'm trying to get to the bathroom if I can. Couldn't even go to the bathroom. I had to hold it. So after we had a few trips to Florida and back and so forth, we had a chance to go to Italy, and we decided to go. The flight was smooth all the way until we get to a certain point. We hit an air pocket, and that plane dropped. It seemed like a mile. It wasn't that far. But even the overhead compartments flew open, and masks came down. Everything came down. And we recovered, of course, and we went on our way. Would you believe it? From that day, my wife is not afraid of flying anymore. No, she goes on the plane without me. She leaves me. She forgets me. Wherever she wants to go, I'm gone. So fear, sometimes it might take drastic things to overcome fear, the phobias that we have, whether it be of snakes, whether it be of anything, is always in us. And Paul, you asked a question early. Can we control it? Yes. We have to make up in our minds that we are going to change. We have to make up in our mind that we are going to do it. I used to stutter, seriously stutter. You wouldn't believe how much I stuttered. My kids in class in high school used to laugh at you so bad. And you know how high school students can be wicked. I'm outside. And one day I had to do Shakespeare with Richard III. And when it was my time to read, everybody got up and started laughing at me. And I swore to myself that morning that I would not stutter. Here I am today, not stuttering. So we can control what we choose to control if we give it enough positive thought and act on it in a positive manner. Back to you, Paul.
Wow. Wow. Powerful, powerful experiences and wisdom and insight coming from Neville and everyone on the call today. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for contributing. Thank you so much for having an open mind and coming to this call with the intention on learning and sharing and growing and moving forward in a more positive, empowered way in your life. As we do this together. Thank you so much. Let's get out there today. Let's take the knowledge we've gained. Let's understand that we do have the ability to control and eliminate many of the fears that hold us back. We do have the ability to develop that state of mind known as faith. We do have the ability to control the thoughts that we plant into our minds and thus and therefore control the events, the realities, the things that come into our lives. Folks, the power is within us. Let's move forward. Let's take action. Let's be persistent. And let's make today one of the best days of our lives. And I look forward to being back here tomorrow morning with you as we jump into the final portion of the book, Think and Grow Rich. Make it a great day, everyone. Thanks again.